This episode is brought to you by the Arvada Center, because they're kicking off their summer concert series in June. Relax under the stars at the Arvada Center's outdoor amphitheater and take in acts like Melissa Etheridge, Big Richard, Tower of Power, Preservation Hall Jazz Band, The Spin Doctors, and so much more. Concerts are scheduled for June through September. You can find a whole schedule of events and get your tickets today at arvadacenter.org. That's arvadacenter.org. Today on CityCast Denver, between the restaurant closures, the empty office buildings, the safety concerns, and all the human poop on the ground, the narrative around downtown Denver is doom and gloom. So what could the city do to turn things around? We've got some ideas. Today is Thursday, February 29th. I'm Bree Davies, and here's what Denver's talking about. I've got our politics and green chili correspondent, Justine Sandoval, here with me. Hi, Justine.
Hi.
And of course, producer Paul Caroli is here. Hi, Paul.
Hey, Bree. Welcome back, Justine. It's been too long since we've been on the show.
We missed you. I missed you all too.
We're glad you're here, especially for this topic we're going to talk about, which is, I think, one of all of our favorite topics.
Oh, yeah.
I have been looking forward to this for so long.
What to do about downtown? Like, what can we do? We're going to come up with some fun ideas, some off-the-wall ideas, some legitimate ideas. I don't know, maybe some of those fun and off-the-wall ideas can be legitimate too. But we really thought about this long and hard. I guess let's just get started. Paul, do you want to start with one of your big ideas to fix downtown?
Yeah, so sure. I'll also say I've got a bunch of ideas here. Only one of them is mine, so I'm mostly stealing other people's glory and brilliance. But we're going to start with one from a person named Chris Nicholson, who I don't know Chris Nicholson, but I was reading about some the debate over downtown back during the mayoral race, and there was an article from governing.com that quoted him. He's a downtown resident who used to work in politics, and his idea reminded me of something that my dad said. My dad's an economist, and he was always like, taxes. What is a tax? A tax is something you do to make things you don't want more expensive. So cigarettes, you tax cigarettes, fewer people will smoke them because they're more expensive. So Chris Nicholson's idea is on that same line. He says, instead of incentivizing retailers to locate downtown by subsidized rents, which they're doing with that like pop-up program,
which has been
mixed,
yeah,
mixed at best,
yeah,
the free rents for businesses to open up there. Chris's idea is to impose a vacancy tax on this empty space.
I have heard this before in other downtowns, actually. I don't know how many places have implemented it, but it definitely is that exact thought, is how do we not punish the right people, but at least like punishing, incentivizing, those are two different things that are trying to sort of do the same thing, right?
Yeah, basically. I mean, it would be like a nudge to landlords to fill empty retail spaces a little bit more frequently. And maybe you could say like, you don't want to put this kind of pressure on landlords. Like maybe that means fewer people would want to do that anyway. And you kind of do want people to be doing business downtown. That's kind of the idea here. So,
I had a friend tell me that their hairdresser moved into an office building, that they've retrofitted a floor for individual booths for hairdressers. So
is that on Glenarm?
I don't know.
Okay. Cause I went to a wax studio and it was in converted office space and it was just different salons. So people could rent. So there was like hairstylist there, there was a waxer, there was
massage therapist, all kinds of things you could do in there. And you don't need a ton of infrastructure change. So,
and it was nice because I live downtown and I like to, get those services close by. And now that no one goes to the Pavilion, there's really affordable parking underneath. So
that is a good lot.
Yes.
That's a well-run,
it is.
Well-managed lot.
Well-lit. It doesn't feel super shady at night.
No.
You know what? Okay, this is going to go into mine a little bit because I want to utilize the Pavilions.
Okay, yeah, bring it on.
So old Denverites complain about things they miss about old Denver. What if we created an immersive or interactive or VR old Denver experience inside one of those empty places in the Pavilions, which is three stories?
Mm-hmm.
They did like a dinosaur one in there.
They already used that space, like the old Gap, for an immersive stuff.
Rest in peace. Yes.
I know.
Many great fallen Gap comrades used to work there. But yeah, like that
so, like,
is the exact space.
Old Denver. Like we're talking, What would you want to see there?
I'm thinking downtown experiences. So like you could recreate shopping at the Maidenhof and walk through the hyperbolic paraboloid, maybe go to the skating rink, maybe go back to the 80s when the Tabor Center was a mall and you could shop at Contempo Casuals or wander the Sharper Image.
Maybe like, go way back to like Wild West days.
Yes. Like you could have different eras of downtown. And like, just like, the feeling, nostalgia feeling, you just need to see the, I look at images of old dead malls all the time. You just see that you could, if you could walk through that thing.
Yeah.
I would pay money for that. And you get a good parking garage. You know, Denverites, if it's got good parking, they'll show up.
Yes. Oh my, I love that. It ties into, no, that is true. I did an event a few weeks ago and I did not pick a place without a parking lot. And I swear it doubled my attendance. People are like, is that a parking lot? No, that ties into like, what I've been saying about revitalizing Denver is embracing the new things. But like a lot of these developments that have happened in the last few years, they miss the mark on like diversity and history of Denver. They don't really embrace that. So bringing things that show Denver's history, that
yeah, it could be educational.
People. Yeah.
It could maybe just give you a sense of what was if you didn't live here. You know, like you said, Paul, Wild West times. Mm-hmm. Let's see what Market Street looked like. Let's see what Larimer looked like.
Or like the oil boom.
Yeah.
You can go in there with a nice, like, one of those old-fashioned suits and pretend to be an office drone.
What was it, like, Dynasty?
Get a martini lounge. Dynasty.
Oh my God. Yeah, boom. Just have piles of cocaine everywhere. It'd be great. No.
Denver in the 80s.
Another nice part of this is every time like a beloved business goes under, they could have a ceremony where they're inducted to the old Denver, afterlife, graveyard thing.
It's like the guy that did the recreation of the Cinderella City Mall online. He created a walkthrough rendering. That's awesome. A good idea, Paul. Then you could be like, okay, I can go to Racine's one more time.
Be like a celebration.
Yes. May not be able to taste the nutty cheese salad, but I can see it.
Oh, Racine's.
I love it. Justine, what have you got?
So one thing that I have that has been one thing I've advocated for a very, very long time is public restrooms.
Oh my God. This feels like an easy fix. This is on my list as well. Why does it matter?
It's the number one thing. I mean, first of all, you know, using the restroom is a human thing that
everyone
has to do. And when you hear about like the cleanliness of the city and sanitation, one of like the big complaints is always like, people are using the bathroom on the ground. And in our city, it seems like we have more public places for our dogs to relieve themselves than we do for people to relieve themselves. So that is a problem to me. And if you don't want poop on the ground, you got to have a place to put it. So public restrooms, I think, are just a very base level solution. And I found this really great group out of Portland called Flush, PHLUSH. And what they do is they advocate for toilet availability. And so they work with local governments to provide adequate toilet accessibility and create sanitation solutions. And their point was that public toilets help revitalize downtown areas because they foster more urban livability and makes people more comfortable going to public places where they can go shop and stroll around downtown and that they know that they have a restroom. It makes it easier for families to plan multi-generational outings because kids and elderly people tend to need
potty training. A human right now who I just had to stop at many gas stations along the interstate for. Mommy, I have to go pee. Where's the gas station?
How many times you stop from Grand Junction to Denver?
No, from Glenwood Springs to Denver yesterday, six times.
Are there six restrooms?
Well, we hit the spot where there wasn't any for like 17 miles before Georgetown.
Whew. He's screaming. Yeah. He's upset.
I was like, please don't poop your pants. But yeah, like it's such a, and Portland is, I'm so glad you brought up Portland because they actually have public restrooms there, the Portland Loo program, which is, it's such a no-brainer, but it's something that's sort of in the back of our minds that we actually sort of subliminally don't realize we're thinking about, but like, oh, I will go to this place because it has a nice bathroom.
Exactly. Another thing is it takes pressure off of businesses to have a public restroom. They can have people come shop, look at their business and not have to provide a public restroom for people. So it takes that pressure off. And it also just helps provide for public sanitation and
no poop on the ground.
Yeah. It's a
pretty simple solution.
People worry about cost, and it can be costly. Like some cities, it's like $4 million to run these programs a year. But that's a drop in the bucket compared to all of the other issues that come with providing.
It's expensive, but we could look at where we could trim some other costs to provide something that I think that taking the pressure off of the businesses is an excellent point. I just want to piggyback off that because part of mine was restrooms and safe injection sites. I understand they're controversial. I talk about it on the show all the time. People are going to do drugs. If we give them a place to do drugs, you're not going to have needles on the ground, which is a thing I hear people complain about all the time. And I agree with you. It sucks. You want to have passed out people on the ground? They will be in a building being taken care of. They're going to do drugs no matter what. Give them a place to do drugs. You don't have to see it. You don't have to be around needles. Just a thought. Paul?
I got a quick one here. So like I said, all of my ideas are stolen. This one from my lovely wife, Megan. We were talking about this the other day and she was like, you know what I really enjoyed was that night market, that Sun Valley night market underneath that viaduct last summer near Empower Field. Great spot near Rice's Brewing. Anyway, so we were like, well, what if we did a night market downtown right outside Union Station?
Absolutely.
You know, it's like two blocks from the old Hop Alley. So it would kind of be building on this tradition, maybe embracing it in a new way. We can invite that KAPU group, Colorado Asian Pacific United, that's been working on the historical markers for Hop Alley. I think there's some real potential there. And that would be so fun.
I love that idea.
I do too. Another reason to activating this, we'll talk about this, I think, a lot throughout this conversation, but activating the space, getting people downtown at all hours of the night is actually what makes it safer and more appealing. And if you do something at night outside that all people are invited to, it's just, it's a benefit for the businesses around it as well.
I really love that, I don't know, what do you call it? That sidewalk area out in front of Union Station too. I feel like that's an underutilized space.
I agree.
And it's easy to get to because it's right on all the transit lines. It's like the one place that's on all the transit lines.
It's got accessibility from a transit perspective. Just put in some lighting, you could put in some semi-permanent stalls, like market stalls, or you could remove them during the winter. And it just like building that little bit of infrastructure, kind of like they do for the Chris Kindle Market during the winter. Just do that for the rest of the year. This episode is brought to you by Pine Melon, the farmer's market delivered. Pine Melon is a next generation grocery delivery app that partners with over 200 farmers, ranchers, and producers in Colorado to help make fresh, locally sourced foods available to the Denver community at fair prices. Get high quality meats, eggs, and dairy from small local farms, fresh baked breads from local bakeries, and more, as well as all of your favorite pantry staples. Best part is, Pine Melon offers same-day delivery to Denver and soon Boulder within a two-hour window, no subscription necessary. Save time in your busy schedule and get fresh and healthy groceries delivered right to your door. Join the movement and support local today. Use promo code CITYCASTDENVER for $75 off your first delivery at pinemelon.com. That's pinemelon.com.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. We're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Who wants to go next?
I would love to.
Go, Paul.
I have one I'm excited about. I was talking to our friend Frank Locantore over at the Colfax Business Improvement District the other day. And we were talking about BRT, the new bus rapid transit system. They're going to start doing construction later this year. We've talked about it. We're going to talk about it again.
Oh, we are.
But something that he's very concerned with this, he's mostly excited, I think. But something he's concerned with is the fact that construction is going to last a very long time, which I think Denverites can relate to all across the city. In this case, the BRT, the businesses that he works with, they're expecting to be affected for a year and a half. That's a long time for a business to deal with. And so what Frank thinks is it's a lot cheaper to keep an old business than to attract a new one. So what can we do to support these businesses that are being affected by construction? Because they're not going to be as attractive. People aren't going to be going as much. His thought is to steal former Mayor Federico Pena's, actually, there's some, I shouldn't say Frank's idea. There's some... It's the Colfax bid. They've been talking about this for a while. I don't want to give it to any one individual. But anyway, his idea is to take former Mayor Federico Pena's public art funding program, the like 1% for public art on any capital improvement project has to have 1% of its budget dedicated to art in the space. He wants to do that same thing, but for businesses affected by construction. Just another 1% tax on capital projects then would then support these businesses and keep them around.
So maybe like help them pay their rent or whatever while they're just not that busy, but still able to retain the space that they're in.
It's still a business that works. It just there happens to be construction there.
Yeah.
So it's not working temporarily.
I love that idea too, because I mean, just thinking about BRT, I think that's the biggest concern for people is the loss of business access for a little bit.
I mean, look at the 16th Street Mall.
I was going
right
to say,
how many businesses down there are suffering because of this construction happening?
It's an aesthetic. It just sucks to walk.
It's unpleasant.
We walk There's around it space. As pedestrians, and it's really, really hard.
Yeah, I mean, living downtown in this area, I feel like I'm just constantly living through construction. Like the 16th Street Mall developments. Impacted me because I drive across 16th to get to my grocery store. So now like every other week there's a new closure. So I have to like reroute. But I think sometimes, construction companies don't always take the extra care to create a space that makes the business accessible. So that helps incentivize them to do a better job too, I think, at making sure that they're not blocking businesses or sidewalks.
I love that. My thought is another one looking at another city's idea for allowing more buskers. So we do have buskers to a certain extent along the mall and kind of throughout downtown. There was like a kerfuffle at the DCPA a couple years ago with the Brothers of Brass and not wanting them down there, and they resolved it. But in Seattle, in the Pike Place Market, they have a busker system, and you apply for a permit. It's $30 a year, so it's not a tremendous amount. Or you can get a one-day pass. And what it does is it basically spreads out the buskers throughout different parts of it to make sure nothing's crowded or there's nothing that's too loud. It kind of is an organized system for the buskers to utilize that also probably keeps the businesses happy.
I'm sure that's nice for the buskers too, because they probably know the places that get the most foot traffic or the places that have the best acoustics.
So it's like kind of spread out, so you aren't necessarily next to somebody, and it's a nicer experience for the pedestrians, a nicer experience for the musicians themselves and the businesses. So that already exists. Doesn't seem super hard to implement. I think it could be something.
Have there been less buskers downtown recently? I don't know that I can't remember seeing one.
I mean, I think in doing a permitting system.
Forever.
I know. Paul.
Okay. Here's my favorite idea. This one's out there. So Denver's got two very cool big blue animals. We got Blucifer out by the airport. Some people call it Mustang. Then we got the big blue bear, whose formal name I forget. And they're both very cool, in my opinion. My idea, let's get another one. Another one, a third big blue animal. I think, this is just my preference, a giant, like sort of badass dragon, flaming red eyes, optional. I would perch it on top of Union Station. I think this would be an instant landmark and make Denver a tourist destination for millions.
The Denver Dragon. It's kind of like a dinosaur,
yes.
So I like it.
Yes. Thank you, Justine. It is like a dinosaur.
Paul, I'm only going to say the location you've chosen feels a little precarious, knowing how we know they manage that.
Fair.
So I can't see them being like, yes, please put a large blue dragon that people are just going to come stand under our building and take pictures of all day.
When they have a $15 drink at the Copper, whatever.
Hey, maybe two. Hey, why not? We're revitalizing downtown here.
I would see it more at the pavilions just because it's kind of got that tacky vibe already, which I like.
You can put it on the pavilions.
But like there's space to put it in there, maybe flying or.
Oh, I like that. I was thinking maybe the top of the cash register building too would be fun. Just like some public art way up in the sky.
That would be great.
Wouldn't that be cool?
It's kind of like that pencil that someone has painted.
I love that pencil.
They're in the middle of the city somewhere.
It's on 15th Street. It's like on 15th and Champa.
Yeah, it's on top of a building and it's like a large sort of chimney
that you walk up to, I think, to get to the roof, and they paint it to look like a pencil. Yeah. I always take pictures of it when I'm sitting.
That's the kind of stuff I love. I'm all about more public art. Something that's got a little bit more pizzazz. I hear what you're saying, Paul.
Hell yeah.
Because Big Blue Bear,
it's cool.
Yeah,
it's
but
nice.
It is, but it's big. It's mm-hmm. a statement piece. Same with Blucifer, a statement piece. We need another statement piece
yeah.
in the blue creature
bigger,
category.
Even more badass.
Okay.
Blue dragon.
I like it. Justine.
Let's see. I just went into urban planning mode. I have just so many things here. I feel like actually the three of us could, they should just put us to work on, I mean.
We're going to need a big budget. A lot of these ideas are pretty expensive.
It's true.
To be fair. I think that's the downside for all of these, unfortunately, is it's very expensive to do this.
Yes. Exactly. We're dreaming, but we could create a great city if we budgeted correctly. That's what I think.
So I called up my friend John Desmond, who's the former executive vice president of the DDP, of the Downtown Denver Partnership. So he worked there for 19 years, and he had a lot of thoughts about
Which 19?
Downtown.
80s, 90s?
No, early 2000s.
Okay.
I think he started there in 2000. But he had this great idea that seems not, it's simple, but it's just, okay, get rid of one-ways. The downtown is full of one-way streets. And I was like, why would you want to get rid of one-ways? And he was like, well, if you're driving, you miss your turn, you have to drive like 6 blocks to get back to where you needed to go. So there's a ton of traffic that doesn't need to be there because people are constantly missing their turns. And it's just like, it's creating more reasons to drive.
Huh.
Also, one-way streets are not pedestrian friendly. Traffic tends to slow down in those smaller areas when traffic is two ways. Because people, think about how people use Josephine and York or Corona and what is it? Oh my God. Downing. They're like miniature speedways through the middle of Capitol Hill. If those were two-way streets all of a sudden, it would be tougher to drive. So it's a little bit of an infrastructure change, but I don't know. It just seemed like a no-duh idea, but also hard for us to comprehend as people. I use those streets all the time.
Yeah. They did this in my neighborhood, which is like Cole area, Five Points Curtis Park. They switched a lot of the traditional one-way streets that would go, like, I think was Arapaho one-way. Like, all like, the streets were one-way. I can't remember anymore. Time has
changed.
Yeah. But they did that in the last, like, decade or so, and they changed a lot of those streets into two-way streets to help with the flow of traffic because we were having downtown traffic go through that way and try to get to the highway, and it was just causing, like, bottleneck backups to get in and out of the neighborhood. So that's interesting. And I know that that was the theory behind it to help the traffic flow through the neighborhood better.
Because traffic flow, I feel like, is one of those complex things where you want traffic to flow, but if it's too easy to flow, then it's too easy to drive, right? And that's sort of the argument is like making it less attractive to drive while also making more options for biking, walking, and bus.
Yeah, I like that one because it's cheap. Doesn't seem super expensive. That's a provocative idea. What does changing one way to two way or vice versa do to the flow?
Yeah.
Curious. What else has Desmond got?
He says that downtown has this problem where things are clustered together. Like Coors Field is a section. DCPA is a section. The museums around like the Art Museum and the Clifford Still and the it's all like clustered in one area. And that doesn't necessarily, he said, it's not bad, but it can be isolating. There need to be multi-uses in these space. So his best example is the DCPA is like hopping for 2 hours before a show and after a show. And then the rest of the time it's dead. So activating those spaces with other businesses and things help create the thing that you need to make a city work, which is people out in the street on, you know, eyes on the street, activating the street more hours a day. So the DCPA
That's
was
an interesting insight.
Yeah. And I think the DCPA is a great example too, because we were talking about, he's like, what is the main thing that you see when you walk into the DCPA is like the hall, the tunnel-y area is like a parking garage.
It's like whole half the building.
Its biggest structure is a parking garage. Nobody wants to look at that.
Another great garage, though.
Is it? I think it's psychotic. I can't handle it. I try at all costs to never park in there.
Same. I always park on
like on the
I'm
street.
I'm gonna give away my secret.
I know. It's like, don't give away those secret parking spots.
That's my way to revitalize downtown. Get your secret spots out of you two.
But just like adding more things to those areas so they're not concentrated for one use.
You brought up Coors Field. I didn't even write this one down, but a way to revitalize a downtown might be to convince the Monforts to sell the Rockies.
That's
so they're a better team.
A brilliant
team.
Idea.
Tell me why. Tell me more.
Better team, more people in the stands.
But they
more
don't have a problem getting day. People in the stands, right?
We could get more people.
Could always have more.
And we can attract tourists who are going to come and see a more competitive game with their team in the Rockies.
How about playoff games? Haven't seen one of those in a
while.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, that would really help revitalize downtown.
Yeah, more days Rockies with games.
I want this for us, but I don't feel like the Monverts care.
No. They're doing exactly what they want
to do. I need to know what the selling
do.
Point was for them. And then one more thing you brought up, which you talked about a little bit too, Justine, was just like green space, changing some of these areas into green space. Brad Siegel talked about this when we talked about conversion of buildings downtown. He was like, also, some of those buildings don't need to be there, and we knock them down and put a park there instead. And I think this is a pretty uniform idea throughout planning, but John was just saying there's some great examples of that where it's pocket parks, it's different things that seating areas, restrooms, these things that make it amenable to humans to be around it, not just I'm driving to this place to pick up my dry cleaning or whatever and I'm leaving. Like, you need to have reasons to be around, and the space itself, the atmosphere, and it has to feel comfortable. He said to me, people feel downtown. Planners see downtown and look at these projects and the grid and how it works. People walk into a downtown or an area and they feel it. How do you make it feel better?
Have you all seen the plans for Skyline Park? They're revamping it again. I think it looks pretty cool. It could be what you're talking about. I don't know.
I hope so, because they really wrecked that.
I know. It hasn't been great the last few years.
I had Skyline Park on my list here as an example, because my parents, who grew up in Curtis Park, they were neighborhood sweethearts. They used to meet up at Skyline Park with all the other kids and play in the fountains all summer.
Oh, really? Oh, that's nice.
I remember doing that as a kid, too.
They're like, we'd go get our sodas, and we'd go play at Skyline Park all day downtown. And that was like our summer activity. And I remember, too, going downtown being like so stoked to go play in Skyline Park on all the rocks and the fountains. And so it was a big deal.
It's right by the Maydanef Tower, the DNF Tower. And for folks that don't know, I think the ice skating rink is there sometimes. Prior to when it was Skyline Park, it was this beautiful sort of sculpture that you could play in by Lewis Halperin. So it was like you said, it's like these multi-level waterfalls, and it wasn't deep. It was like a foot deep, so you could stand in it. And you know what I mean? It wasn't a hazard or anything. And I don't know, a decade or two decades ago, they demolished half of it. And it just ruined the beauty of it. I'd love to see them resurrect that.
Yes.
They biffed it. That was a mistake.
It was a major mistake. It's embarrassing that we did that, but also not surprising. Well, Justine and Paul, this was super fun.
We fixed downtown.
I agree.
Job done. Pretty much fixed it.
I'm impressed.
I'm impressed by our work today.
Yes.
We really did it. Good for us.
If anybody wants to take these ideas, just call us and let us know. We're happy to consult you on them.
Anytime.
Yeah. Well, Justine and Paul, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bree.
Oh, and a quick correction. After we recorded this, I double-checked, and the designer behind Skyline Park is actually Lawrence Halperin, not Lewis Halperin. My bad. That's all for today here on CityCast Denver. If you enjoyed this show, why not take a minute to tell someone who knows how to make a giant dragon out of fiberglass about us? Rate the show wherever you get your podcasts, and subscribe to our morning newsletter and learn more about us at denver.citycast.fm. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more news from around the city. See ya. I don't know where that came from. I didn't put it in there. We have a zombie doc.